Well, good afternoon, everybody. Yeah, good afternoon. It's about a minute after 12. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Behind the Mic here in the beautiful Music Town up on the second floor of Hockey Town in downtown Detroit. We are live in the D, so thanks for tuning in. And some of you may be watching after the fact, which is fine, but we appreciate that. What I do here is bring in local artists, mostly local artists, and feature them, talk to them, and find out what's going on in their world of music. And we do this every week. So again, thank you so much for tuning in. And a big thank you to our sponsors, Michigan State University Community School of Detroit and Children's Hospital of Michigan Foundation. Without these sponsors, then this wouldn't happen at all. So thank you very much to those two sponsors. We appreciate it. And we appreciate you supporting local music and music in general. So we have another guest this week, and I want to say hello to Steve Taylor. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you, Pam. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good. Yeah. Always nice to just get in here with someone with just them and a guitar, you know, simple for the lunchtime, which
makes
is always nice.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I don't mind when all the bands and everything get in here. That's fun, too. But nice to have you in here.
Thank you.
And before we go further, I want to mention about your coat. I love this coat.
Oh, thank you.
We were just talking about before going live, you know, the patches on it. And I have to make you stand up eventually.
Right.
And go ahead.
We can do it.
All right. Can you see the back? Yeah. It's got all kinds of patches.
Right.
I drank and I know things.
Yeah,
I didn't notice it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Game of Thrones reference.
Okay. Yeah. So you collect these. This is your performance jacket,
yes,
which is kind of cool. I mean, it's kind of nice when you have something that, you know, is always the same, even
right,
though, you know, the music is new or the atmosphere is new or the people are new, whatever. But there's that one thing. And I like to say it's my Pam exam, which
like
is
it.
The same, you know, every time,
yes,
I pull out these questions. We'll get to those in a little bit. But it's kind of nice that way. Do you notice that? It's like people recognize, oh, yeah, the jacket with the...
Honestly, I don't wear it when I perform that often.
You know?
Yeah, honestly. I think because it's got sleeves and it gets a little cumbersome with the playing. But...
Okay.
Yeah, I definitely like it.
Yeah,
you know?
It's cool.
Yeah.
People are handing you patches to put on
there. It's a conversation piece because, people do buy me patches. And
did you ever have patches like, oh, I can't put this on there or something?
Well, my wife took my older son to Cedar Point this summer, and they had gotten a couple of patches from the rides that they had ridden.
Oh, right.
And I felt weird of putting on those on because I hadn't been on those roller coasters. I felt like I hadn't earned those patches. So I still have those.
You gotta earn it.
Yeah.
Well, and plus that's advertising for them. It's like, do I want to do this or not? You know.
That's true.
Also, anyway, about the coat. Enough of that. It's more about the music and what you're here for today.
Thank you.
So,
yes.
Gosh, you've been doing this a while.
I have.
I was trying to go back through and remember. And
well, I think we might have crossed paths first when I graduated college. I went to school out in Boston.
Yeah.
And after I graduated, I moved back to the Detroit area, and I joined a local band called Voodoo Hippies.
Okay.
You know, and that was the band I played in for about 10 years.
Yeah.
And did that. And then I played with Tim Diaz for a long time.
That's where I think I...
Yeah, that's probably
that's
where
the, Tim.
We know each other. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's cool. Mm-hmm. I know there was somewhere we crossed paths. Somehow.
I know there is, yeah. We've both been around for such a long time.
I know. I think about it. It's like, gosh, I've been doing this a long time in this area. It's like, and sometimes people think, that I should remember them. I mean, it's like, I've met
everybody.
Thousands of people,
yes,
and you know, especially listeners and everything. It's like, I'm sorry, you know, where did we meet? Anyway, but that's cool. I knew we had crossed paths somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
And you mentioned just now your schooling. You went to Boston, Berklee.
I went to Berklee College of Music. Yeah,
that's quite an impressive school. And
thank you. Yeah,
yeah.
I always say that I didn't have a lot of options. Like, I really wasn't good at anything else. So for me, I think I was lucky to get into music school because I don't think I would have been successful at a traditional college.
And you had no other insights of, you know, what you might do? I mean,
not really. I mean, I only applied to Berklee.
Okay.
And my guidance counselor in high school was not at all happy about that. He thought I should have had a backup, and he was probably right. But I made up my mind that that's where I wanted to go.
Well,
and
that's probably helped you because you were on a straight path. You knew it's like, well, why should I have a plan B? I mean, most people should have a plan B, I would sometimes,
sure,
but you knew from how early of an age did you know
that? I started playing music, I think, when I was about 12 was when I first started playing. And yeah, I pretty much knew that that's what I wanted to do.
Uh-huh.
And I had a good friend, and he went to school out in Colorado, and he said to me, you're so lucky because you know exactly what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, you're so lucky because you have options.
That is true.
It's like,
that is true.
You can make decisions, and that was, you know.
And so try out different things.
Right.
You know, which
right.
a lot of people, when they go to college, they really don't know what they're doing.
And, that's true.
You know, just try different things, different classes, different mm-hmm. social groups, whatever, and,
yeah.
you know, maybe figure it out that way. But,
right.
you know, I mean, so, do you ever think back, oh, I could have done something else or could have done this?
That's a good question. I haven't really, no, I never really thought about that. I never fell back on anything because,
okay.
you know, but I do teach as well. I've always taught, you know, I've always taught lessons and I've done classroom.
There's your plan B.
That's my plan B. Yeah.
you know,
or right along, you know,
yeah.
plan A.
Yeah. And I read somewhere you had like 75 students a week.
I did. There was a point in my life I did.
That's
when,
crazy.
Know, when I was younger before I had kids and, you know, I could, you know, teach 6 or 7 days a week. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you didn't just teach guitar. What else did you teach?
I've always taught mainly guitar and piano.
Okay.
Those have been the two main things. And
yeah.
but now, I mean, I've got a couple saxophone students. I have a few cello students. I have a few ukulele students.
Wow.
So yeah, and that's, it's fun for me because it's, you know, then you're not doing the same thing all the time. It gives
yeah.
me a chance to, you know, get time on those instruments as well that I might not normally get performing.
All right.
Yeah.
That's a lot of students.
That is, yeah.
Lot.
I don't have 75 anymore. You
oh,
know,
okay.
I had to cut back a little bit.
yeah,
you
once
know.
You get, you know, with the kids, go your own kids.
Yes.
Come in. So, do you teach your kids music?
Well, it's funny. I've learned as a parent, you can't really teach your own kids anything. My younger son, we've had him in piano lessons for 2 years.
How
and,
old is he?
He's about to turn 9.
Okay.
And in fact, they're both home watching right now because they had another snow day today.
Oh wow!
Because we live up in Lake Orion where there's a lot of dirt roads.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
So Jonah and Griffin, you know, give them a shout out because they're home. You know.
Okay.
But we had Griffin in piano lessons, and at first I tried to teach him, and that did not go well.
Mm.
That did
yeah,
not go well
yeah.
at all.
Not with the parent.
So
yeah.
Yeah. You know, because we would. I still sit down and we'll practice every day together, but he'll argue with me. Quite a bit.
About that age, yeah.
Yes. And
yeah.
my older son, I did teach how to play saxophone this past summer because he just started sixth grade and now he's playing in the sixth grade
oh,
band.
Okay.
He's doing,
yeah.
doing really well.
Okay.
You know?
Well, it's always good to know, you know, in their mind that if I have a question, I know I can ask Dad and
That's
he
true.
Can help me out, you know.
Right.
So,
yeah.
But yeah,
yeah,
as a full-fledged parent and teacher, sometimes, yeah, a little
Yeah, they tend to listen to anybody else except for you,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, down the line, when they get older, they'll appreciate it and
yeah,
realize
I,
what
I
you were doing.
I
yeah.
hope so.
Well, good
I
for them.
So. Yeah.
You know, and they haven't chose their path. They're at that kind of at that age where you did, but
That's true, yeah.
You know, let them experiment.
But again, I think, you know, kind of like you said with college, the idea is to expose them to as many things as you can
yes.
and let them figure out what's
going to
work for them,
yeah.
what's going to be right for them.
All right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if they follow in Dad's footsteps, you know, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe not. Maybe.
Yeah. Either way, I'll be fine with it.
Go with
know?
The flow. Let's
yeah.
see what happens. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, good for them.
Yeah. Thank
How
you.
Long you been married now?
Almost 16 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very good.
When
she...
we started dating, I mean, I was 23 and she was 22 at the time that we started dating. So, we've been together even longer than that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is she into music as well, playing?
She is, yeah. She's a dancer. She taught dance and performed for a lot of years, you know. She still works at a dance studio,
okay.
as a matter of fact. So
oh, cool.
she understands
performing. Got that creative.
She's got that creative thing
gene,
going
yeah,
on. Yeah,
yeah,
she gets it. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, good. Great song.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
And that
much.
Is on this new album, the Steve Taylor 3, and it's called the Tennessee Sessions.
Yes, it is.
So did you actually move to Nashville for a while? Or?
I did not, know. We didn't
okay.
live there, no.
Okay.
But we've taken a couple trips there.
Okay.
We got a good friend. His name is J.T. Harding. He's a songwriter. He's from Detroit. He now lives in Nashville. And he's written like 6 number one country songs.
Okay.
He wrote Smile with Uncle Cracker, and he wrote Somewhere in My Car with Keith Urban, and he wrote Sangria for Blake Shelton. So he's got a lot of big, big, big hits.
Yeah.
And a couple of years ago, he invited me to come to the Bluebird Cafe and play with him there. And the band came, and we all kind of played. And that's when we did our first session in Nashville.
Okay.
So
Is that like a big place for musicians?
Well, it's a big place for songwriters. Ironically, it's a very, very tiny place. It's
okay.
a really
oh.
small, it's not even sort of in downtown. It's kind of off the beaten path.
Okay.
But it's
sometimes
sort of,
those are the best places.
Those are, and I think that's why it became so famous for
yeah.
songwriters,
okay.
where they kind of invented the sort of songwriters in the round thing. It's a very, very small room, and basically they have 4 songwriters that sit in chairs, you know, facing each other on the floor,
uh-huh.
and everyone just sort of sits around them.
And you, and you perform. With
and
the,
performs, and
okay.
everyone plays their original songs, and it's a lot of people that have written, you know, big hits for people, and you get to hear the actual songwriters perform their songs that they
do
wrote.
Do you ever just sit there and then just like throw out a thought and then you actually compose a song right then and there?
That's a good question. I've never seen that happen. Usually people
That would
be
cool.
That would be cool. Yeah, live songwriting. That
yeah.
would be something. Definitely with this group that plays there.
I mean, you've written so many songs, and you know that's your niche. Your niche.
Yeah, I think that's it.
That you know, songwriting. It's like that would be really inspirational, I think, and
right.
Just feed off each other, and
yeah.
You know, like just throw out two or three lines, and then the next, you know, kind of go on and on.
Yeah, but it's a really cool place, and yeah. I think part of the reason why it's as legendary as it is that's where Garth Brooks sort of played and got his first record deal.
Okay.
And Taylor Swift also got her record deal after playing at the Bluebird Cafe.
Oh, so you never know who's in the audience.
That's
in other
right,
words.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's really interesting in the sense that you could hear a pin drop in that place.
Oh.
They absolutely do not tolerate people any talking at all.
Thank you. I love that.
They actually have T-shirts that say the Bluebird Cafe, and on the back it says, shh.
Well,
so after that trip to Nashville, I came back and I started a songwriter night at a place up in Birmingham that's now called Vinoteca. And
okay.
We do it once a month on a Thursday.
Uh-huh.
And we get five local songwriters together, and everybody gets up and plays four of their original songs. And, you know, it's been a great, great thing.
That's another good way, if someone knows you, but they don't know these other artists, another way to expose, these artists to new
yeah.
listeners as well.
And so. It's great because obviously, you know, in the Detroit music community, we all know each other.
Yeah.
But the way things work now, there aren't so many multiple band shows anymore. Now it's like one bar, one band, where it used to be, you know, we would play, bars would have all original music and they'd have four bands playing. So you never really get to see your friends play because everybody's always working.
Right, right.
You know?
That's why a lot of times people like the events, like a Detroit Music Award event or something, because they know they're not working that night, but they're able to meet and see all their friends and hang together. It's always fun. You know, I've been emceeing that for mm-hmm. many years now, the pre-shows, and it's fun to see everybody because, like, oh, hey, you know, just like connecting again.
Right.
And yeah, it's hard when you're supposed to be out playing and you don't mm-hmm. get to see other people in your genre. So that's
yeah.
kind of cool.
Yeah.
So, songwriting obviously is your main thing. And actually, when you went to Berkeley, was songwriting your major?
I was a songwriting major.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That actually was my major. Yeah.
That's cool that they actually have one specific major of songwriting. I mean, you
right.
know, because that's huge.
Yes.
You know, if you don't know how to write the song, then you know what the heck.
Yeah. You know. And at the time that I was there, it was more geared towards writing for other people. It really wasn't geared towards singer-songwriters at the time.
Okay.
It's changing now. I think the program has changed quite a bit,
yeah.
you know, as things have evolved, you know.
Well, they still have the major that's
they do, yeah.
But, okay, it's just,
yep.
Well, you have to, you know, keep up with the times and what people
yeah.
want now.
Right.
You know, unless you do the big arenas, you know, a lot of it is the coffee shops and just the singer-songwriter type
yes.
things. At least that's what I see a lot of.
That's true.
You know,
yeah.
especially those places don't want, you know, a full-fledged band banging out when people are having something to eat or,
that's
you
true.
Know, chatting. So,
right. But it's funny, you know, you say that because doing this songwriter night up in Birmingham, like when I first started it, and we do it in a separate room in the back. That's
okay.
got no video games and no TV sets, and it's got its own bar and its own set of bathrooms.
Okay.
So it's actually a completely separate space, and it's perfect to do a listening room type
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
But people are so unaccustomed to that people didn't really know how to behave. And I had to, at the beginning of every show, I had to explain to them, look, you know, this is a listening room, and let's be respectful, and let's not talk, and,
yeah.
you know. And it's evolved, and now we're starting to draw a good crowd every month for these songwriter nights.
How long have you been doing that now?
About just over 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah,
all
but
right.
believe me, for the first 3 or 4 months we did it, it took a while to build an audience because there was nobody there.
Yeah.
It was time to start the show at 7 o'clock, and there wasn't anybody in the audience that wasn't performing.
That has happened, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, but I'm very happy now that, you know, we've had enough people come through and the word has spread enough that we're starting to draw good
and people
numbers.
Probably, at least I know myself, you mm-hmm. know, appreciate you're there, you can, to listen and to find new music and, you know,
mm-hmm.
and appreciate
yeah.
the songwriting. So
yeah.
a lot of people, you know, once the word got out about how that is run, I'm
right.
sure that, you know, that's why it kind of spread and people were passing the word along about
yeah.
what you do there. So that's cool.
And people really listen to the songs more and they listen to the lyrics more and, you know, they listen to the stories because people will tell stories before, you know, their songs.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I
yeah.
think it adds to the appreciation of the craft of songwriting and helps people get deeper into the music when they can actually hear people's lyrics.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And even the people that have come through are a little bit thrown off by the fact that people are paying such close attention because we're all used to playing in crowded bars that are noisy. You can get away with a lot more. And this is like, you know, dead silent and everyone's paying
better
attention.
Be on your game.
Exactly.
And, you know,
Yeah.
Do you find you do the lyrics when you're songwriting before the music or?
That's a good question. It's almost never the same twice. It really, like, there's no, if there was a formula to do it, then we all just follow that formula. But things, little pieces of melody will come and, you know, and then maybe the music will come. And it never seems to work the same way. I mean, two of the biggest, I think, things that have helped out in recent years with songwriting is the iPhone having a voice memo function, right? And, and just having the notes app. So, I mean, I've written more just, you know, I get an idea and I'm driving and I just sing it into the voice memo, you know.
Yeah.
And that's basically how I write songs these days, because when you're pressed for time, you don't have a lot of time to sit down and work things out. So you got to take things.
I think a lot of people probably use that. And you think about all before we had this technology, how many good songs were just lost?
Yeah.
Before, you know, by the time they got to their destination and found a piece of paper and pencil, it was gone, you know.
That's right.
It's like... Just think.
I remember when I was at Berkeley, we had a songwriting. When people would come through town, famous writers, they would get them to come by the school and give a talk to the songwriters. I remember Richard Marx happened to be in town when I was at school, and they brought him in for a songwriter workshop. And he was talking about the exact same thing. And he would get an idea, and he'd be out to dinner, and he would get on the payphone and call his answering machine at home.
Whatever works.
If someone walked by, he'd pretend like he was on hold. And he pretended like he was humming along to the on-hold music, when really he was singing a melody he just thought of into his own answering machine.
Interesting.
So that's a sort of low-tech workaround.
Whatever works, you know. You've got this great song, and you're thinking, this is good. I can't lose it,
you know?
Yeah. Whatever you got to do. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised you didn't just write stuff on napkins, of course.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
That's funny. That's funny. You've done stuff. Your songs... Was it Dawson's Creek?
Oh yeah,
one of your songs.
Yeah, back in my days playing with the Voodoo Hippies, which is the band that I was in after I was in college. I moved back to Michigan and joined that band, and we had a song that I had written called "Without" that we had recorded and ended up on the Dawson's Creek soundtrack.
So how does that happen?
That's a good question.
You don't know.
I'm not really sure. I think somebody knew somebody that was doing the music, you know, supervising for the show, and when it came time to release it on DVD, that's when it got on there. And I just remember that I've never seen Dawson's Creek, you know.
Me neither. There was more of a teen.
Yeah, I think I was a little.
Is that
I was a little too old
Katie
for that
Holmes
show.
Was on?
That's right.
Okay,
she was on it.
Okay.
And as much as I'd like to hear my song on the show, I didn't want to have to watch 8 seasons of Dawson's Creek to find it. But they wrote us a nice check, and we got to finish our record as a result.
Hey, but it would be nice to know how you go ahead and do that. I mean, again, like that song you just played, it'd be perfect for, you know, a made-for-TV movie of sorts or something, you know.
Yeah.
And that would just be a good song. So how do you figure out who to send this to
or
what do you do?
Well, if anyone's watching who's a music supervisor, get in touch with us. We'll send it to you.
Okay. Yeah, you know, and that could take a lot of, you know, you've got to research who to send it to, you know, and you got to pass the gatekeepers to, you know, to send it to. But that, I don't know, it might be worth it. But
yeah, yes.
Just my thought when you're playing that, that's what came to mind.
Oh, thank you.
But
yeah.
I mean, it was a good song. So.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And that's on this CD.
That is on the CD as well, the Tennessee Sessions.
Now, it's the Steve Taylor 3.
Yes.
Who are the other two?
I'm glad you asked. Well, I mentioned before my drummer's name is Carrie Weaver, and great drummer. And then Brian Frink is my bass player and producer, engineer. Okay. He produced the record. And both guys that I've known for a long, long time. In fact, after the Voodoo Hippies broke up, I started just doing solo acoustic shows for a long time. And then Brian and Carrie just said one night, they're like, we're gonna show up and we're going to play with you. And I was like, yeah. But then I was playing at a bar, and they literally showed up, and I was in the middle of a set, and they set up behind me while I was playing.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, just set up bass and drums. And then and when they set up, we just started playing. And the band was together for 2 years before we rehearsed. We just would play shows and we'd do a lot of 3-4 set shows and just kind of wing it, you know.
Is that hard to do when you don't rehearse? But I mean, you must feed off each other and know what you're doing.
Well, I think it made us a better band. It made us communicate a lot better.
Okay.
You know, where my drummer Carrie Weaver, he's really good at picking up real subtle signals as far as this is where the song's going to stop or this is where it needs to build.
Okay.
You know. But I mean, I'm sure we had many train wrecks, you know, doing it live in front of an audience, trying to rehearse stuff. For
I
the
think
first
that's
time.
Cool, though. You know,
yeah, I think it informed our sound in a way too. And eventually, they were the ones that said, "We want to start working on original music again, and we want to record an album."
Yeah.
And our first album, "Check Your Baggage," which came out in 2014, that was the result of that, was mm-hmm. us just starting to say, hey, let's start working on some brand new stuff, you know?
That's cool. Yeah. And, you know, and the drummer, you know, is kind of the leader, mm-hmm. you know, keeps right. the pace and, you know, yes. and whatever. But if he can read you and what you, you know, what direction you're going, that's pretty cool.
And he did something really cool, which is he built this drum kit where he took a floor tom and flipped that forward and made that his bass drum and oh. kind of built this sort of Franken drum kit so we could fit into the corner of these tiny bars where I was normally just playing solo, mm-hmm. you know. So
yeah.
it's often I would take a cymbal in the elbow because we were tacked on top of each other.
But it worked.
Yeah, so really we cool. got, yeah, so Brian, and they both sing, and they're both great songwriters. We write all the songs together, you know, and they okay. all contribute their ideas, you know, and Brian's a great songwriter, and so is Carrie. So it's great to be in a band with them.
Yeah.
And for the past year or year and a half, we've been working with a pedal steel player as well named Larry Lebeck, oh. who's he's been with us for a while now, and he plays.
The band is growing.
The band is growing, yeah. So when we do the CD release party on March 3rd at mm-hmm. Fifth Avenue, we're going to be really expanded because okay. we've got the three of us, and then we've got Larry Lebeck on the pedal steel, and then Gia Warner and Renee Paquette, who was the lead singer of Voodoo Hippies, are both going to sing backing vocals.
Okay.
And we're going to have a four-piece horn section
wow.
since we're doing all these songs that we did in Memphis with yeah. the horns. So it's really going to be a much bigger band than, yeah. than we're used to playing with.
No, I can't get the elbows.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, really tight. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's cool.
So fortunately, we'll have more room.
Okay, well, good. And again, you said March 5th.
Or March 3rd. 3rd yeah, Saturday, March 3rd. Yep. And you can get tickets through Eventbrite, or you can go to our website, thestevetaylor3.com. And you okay. can hit the ticket link from there.
Fifth Avenue, downtown Royal Oak.
Fifth, yeah, and we're going to have the Whiskey Charmers is a great duo. They're going to open up the show.
Okay.
So.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
We'll be.
Yeah.
All right.
You should all join us.
That'll be good, yeah. And yeah, and hot off the presses.
Yes,
you know,
yeah. Pam gets an advanced copy.
The cellophane is still on it. I haven't been able to open
exactly.
it.
Exactly. It's brand new.
Yeah, so very cool. And interesting. You know, there's been this big thing about CDs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it was Best Buy, or it was like they told all their people that we're not supplying these anymore. You know,
right.
their suppliers. We don't.
Yep.
We won't be doing it. So, what's mm-hmm. your thought on that?
It's really interesting to see the way that the music industry has changed. And I read that same article. In fact, I remember about 5 years ago, Best Buy said to all the record companies, they said, "We want to sell all the albums for $9.99." Because that's what they were going for on iTunes.
Okay.
And everybody lost their minds because, yeah. you know, in the heyday of yeah. CDs, they were getting up to $14, $15,
yes,
$17.
Yes.
And they just said, you know, and that's when Best Buy, I think, started changing their floor space. Because mm-hmm. if you go into a Best Buy now, good luck finding the
yes.
CDs.
Yes, yeah. I remember
they're
that.
Buried like... amongst video games and stuff.
Yes.
But, I mean, it's sort of just a sign of the times that this is changing the way that people consume music,
mm-hmm.
you know, but for me, I'm old and I still buy CDs,
yeah.
you know, because even though the MP3, we got a gigantic leap forward in portability. We got a gigantic leap backward in fidelity.
Yes.
You know, it's compressed. So it does not sound as mm-hmm. good, mm-hmm. you know,
which is why vinyls and, you know,
yeah.
record shows are so big.
That's true.
Growing at least, you know,
yes.
that people want that sound you cannot get
yeah.
in the MP3s.
You can't, yes, you can't
yeah.
recreate it, yeah. And
yeah.
we're actually doing a limited vinyl run of this album as well.
Oh, cool.
For that
okay.
reason, for the people that are really into music are the people that are really into vinyl.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I, like, even with my kids, like, if we have a drive that's going to be longer than 20 or 30 minutes, I will bring an album and I will play it for them and
mm-hmm.
I will pull the insert out and I will pass it over my shoulder to them in the back seat.
Love it.
Because I want them to have that sort of tactile experience
yes.
of...
Yeah.
of, okay, looking at the pictures and yeah. reading the lyrics and having it be an experience rather than something that you do while you're doing something else.
Yes.
You know? Because I'm sure that was the same for you. When I was growing up, like, listening to music was its own activity.
Oh, yeah. You pull out the album.
Yeah.
And, you know, read the, you know, the sleeve inside, you know, had the
liner
pictures
notes.
And the
mm-hmm.
liner notes and sometimes the lyrics. And, oh, yeah, the
yeah.
record was cool. Just,
yeah.
you know, you put it on and you sit there and you read
right.
through.
I remember
oh, yeah.
riding my bike to a Harmony House
oh,
and buying
yes,
a new record
yeah.
and coming home with my big headphones and putting it on the record player
yep.
and reading
mm-hmm,
the lyrics
mm-hmm.
right along with it. And that was an activity
yes.
unto itself.
Yeah.
That was
yeah.
An experience.
Yes,
yeah.
So many kids won't experience such a thing.
Right. And I just think the album is still a viable art form in the sense that I like when an artist puts out an album and they've got 12 songs that they've written and they've put them in this order for a reason. And
mm-hmm.
you know, and I still like listening to an album.
Well, that's the thing. When you know, when you have a CD or an album, the order of the songs is huge.
It's important.
It's very important. Yeah,
right.
People don't realize that.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if they have specific people, especially the bigger companies, that
right.
figure out the best format, right, you know, what goes before what, you know?
They probably do. It's probably focus-grouped.
Yeah. Probably. You're probably right. But
I'm sure it's the same for you. When you hear a song out of context from the record, when that song ends, in your mind, you hear the song that comes after it starting up, in the sense that, like, you have that memory of listening to the songs in an order, especially a classic
yes,
album.
Yes, yes.
So you get to the end of one song, and you're like, oh, and you're waiting
yep,
for that next
you
one
know,
to start
yeah.
up. Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Talk about crazy. It's Pam exam time.
Oh, it's time for the Pam exam. I've been looking forward to this.
I know. I get this text from him. It's like, I'm practicing for my Pam exam.
Studying.
Studying, yeah.
That's right.
You can't study for the Pam exam.
That's the whole point.
All right. You never know what I'm going to pull out of
All
here.
Right.
So what was your very first job?
Oh, my first job. Oh, that's a great question. The first thing I ever got paid to do, I think I was 14, and it was an odd job just for an older couple.
Handy kid.
Yeah, it was sort of like just manual labor, just move this pile of rubbish from here to here. But the first job I ever really had was bagging groceries at Great Scott. It was 15 and Telegraph.
Oh, wow.
And I bagged groceries. And when you're that age, it's hard to get a job doing anything.
Yeah.
But I bagged groceries. That was my first gig. And then when I was in high school, I worked at a movie theater. And that was a lot of fun.
Nice way to see free movies.
Yes, it was great because it was an AMC theater. So we could go to any AMC theater and see any movie.
Yeah.
So we pretty much would see every movie that came out because we could.
All right. If you were a spice, what would it be?
Oh, if I was a spice. Wow. I think it's a four-way tie between parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme.
Simon and Garfunkel.
That's
here
right.
We go.
I think every time I go to someone's house and they have a spice rack, I need to like arrange the spices so those four are next to each other.
Really?
Oh yeah, just because I think it looks funny. You know, if you know the Simon and Garfunkel song, you know.
And he's another one of those artists that just announced farewell tour. It's like, what's going on?
And obviously Paul Simon, like, he's legendary. And I thought it was interesting that he announced that he was going to retire, but after this tour. So buy your tickets now. But I went to see him a couple years ago, and when I was getting into music, one of the first things I did was raid my dad's album collection, which is what everybody does.
Yeah,
and I took all his Simon and Garfunkel records and his Beatles and Stones,
mm-hmm.
and I left the Village People right where I found it. But my dad and I would sing Simon and Garfunkel songs together.
Oh, fun.
And the last time Paul Simon came to town, he played Meadowbrook, which I thought was like someone made a mistake and booked Paul Simon at Meadowbrook. And it was a great show. And
he puts on a good show.
Oh, and he must have had 15 people on the stage, and everybody played at least three instruments.
Yes.
You know, like there was a point where I was hearing this guitar solo that was, I'm like, who was playing that guitar solo? It was the drummer. He was sitting back there with a guitar.
Really?
Yeah. And it was actually, the concert was on Father's Day, and I took my dad to see Paul Simon at Meadowbrook on Father's Day.
Nice.
So that was an amazing show.
So your dad, did your dad influence you with a lot of the music?
He played saxophone in his high school band. He's always sang. He's got a great voice. And he still sings in church choirs. And occasionally when he comes out to see me, we'll bust out a Simon and Garfunkel song together. Yeah,
fun. Put him on one of your records one of these times.
Yeah, that's what we should do.
Yeah,
we should record him. Yeah,
a good father son song.
Yes.
Be? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I wish I could.
Oh, fill in the blank.
Fill in the blank.
Oh wow.
I wish I could.
Oh wow. Sometimes for me, I wish that I could make more hours in the day. Sometimes I just feel like I can't get everything done that needs to get done in 24 hours. I think I need to find a way to extend the day. So for me, if there was one thing I could change, I would the ability to control time.
Well, some of us don't want it any longer. You know?
That's right. I'm always looking to squeeze more time out of it.
Do you feel like you're always running out of time?
I'm always off in a million different records
because
I have three jobs. You know, I teach at Sacred Heart in Bloomfield Hills. I teach band and choir the middle school boys. And then I leave there and I go and teach private lessons.
Goodness.
And then often I go right from private lessons to playing a gig somewhere. So it makes for a hectic day.
Yeah, you need more hours in a day.
Yes,
for sure.
I do.
Sure. Okay, oh my gosh. Wow. The biggest obstacle in the music industry today is?
I think we just hit upon it, which is... how to survive in the non-CD, non-album market.
Because
now that people aren't selling albums anymore, and that's such a small part of their revenue,
now
I think the album really is just sort of an advertisement for the concert.
Mm-hmm.
Really, people
mm-hmm.
are just giving it away for free, hoping people will come to the concert.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's good and bad in the sense that with the internet, the loving the playing field has been leveled to the point where, you know, people can release albums on their own through iTunes or just through their own website, and we've kind of cut out the need for a record company. But it's also hard to penetrate, you know, and to get into all the markets that they could get you into.
Wasn't it Beyoncé that did that? And it's like within one day or something, she released this big album or something.
She did. She dropped her whole album with no fanfare. Didn't tell
me. Her record label had to be going, oh my gosh, you know, freaking out.
And she had videos for every single song. Yeah. She dropped it all at the same time. Yeah, it's amazing.
That's gutsy.
Yeah,
that is gutsy. Yeah, give it to her that. Anyone that you would like to collaborate with, dead or alive at this point?
Oh, dead or alive.
Yeah.
Well, that makes the conversation really interesting.
Well, because there's so many good ones that have gone, you know, that you maybe want to be with.
That's
or, you know, try something with. So.
Well, I mean, for me, I mean, obviously, I was a huge fan of the Beatles, you know, and grew up on their music. And just I just think their contribution is so incredible.
Yeah.
I don't think young people realize that the Beatles were only a band for 9 years. And they were only recording for 8 of those 9 years.
Yes.
So in 8 years, the Beatles recorded 13 albums that changed the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it all before they were 30. They were all in their 20s when they did all of that, which is amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing. Yeah.
You know, and I see Paul McCartney usually if I can when he comes to town.
He's another one. Puts on an amazing show when he performs. Yeah,
it still sings everything in the original key, which blows me away.
Well, it's not like Robert Plant and Led Zeppelin that, you know, hit these major high notes, and he said he'll never do it again because he can't do that anymore.
Right.
Paul, on the other hand, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe it's his vegan style of eating that is.
Maybe that's it. But he's still out there and putting on a show.
Yeah, he does. He does do. He does some amazing work. Yeah, he's fun. Another good one to watch.
Yes.
What I like about him, and, you know, please, everyone, take note. It's when I saw him, I was like, the one thing that stuck out was you could hear every single lyric.
Yes.
It wasn't like sometimes I wonder that these sound people are going deaf because it's like, okay, I don't want that bass overpowering everything and I can't hear the words.
Yeah.
So that was the one thing about Paul McCartney. His sound people...
His lyrics,
you know.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, he's got, you know, billions of dollars that he can buy the top-notch equipment also that, you know, the microphones and everything. But still, I mean, that made it a better concert because you could hear the words.
Yeah.
Of course, we knew the words from all the Beatles and
knows
all his stuff, but still.
But yeah, you want to hear the words and you want to hear Paul sing.
That made it a little more special that it's like, I'm here, I can hear it, you know.
Yeah. And the great thing about Paul, he's never really gone away. Like, he's always performed. There are some legendary artists that would take 10, 15 years off and not tour and not perform.
Mm-hmm.
Paul's always toured, always performed. So
yeah.
I think he's stayed on the top of his game.
I think
he's never
what he does, so
he
keeps doing it.
Clearly he doesn't need the money, so he's doing it for the love of the
clearly.
Game.
Yeah, for sure. All right, another question here. And I don't know if you have a bucket list or not, but give me at least one thing that's on your bucket list right now.
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I mean, for us, you know, one of the things, you know, getting the chance to go to Nashville a few times and perform there was amazing. And doing the Bluebird Cafe was unreal. And getting to go to Sun Studios and record there was something I never thought that I would be able to do. So that was amazing. And, believe it or not, I've never been to New York City.
Really?
I went to school in Boston and, you know.
Right around the corner.
I know. I didn't have a car. Like, a lot of us, if you've ever been to Boston, Massachusetts, I mean, they have a great public transit system.
Yeah.
There's nowhere to park anyway. So having a car works against you more than it works for you. So I never got up to New York City. So
don't they have some kind of a train that you can hop up to the city?
I don't know if you get all the way to New York City from Boston.
Surprised.
They have commuter trains and they have a subway, you know.
They didn't have Uber back then.
They did not have Uber back then. Or the internet, for that matter. So,
okay, so you need to go to New York City.
I think I need to go to New York City.
Yeah, everyone needs to experience NYC once, at least once.
That's good to know.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've been there a few times,
My wife has been there a number of times. And
what's your wife's name?
Her name is Megan.
Megan, he needs to go. Plan a trip.
Yes.
So do you find you're always, you know, got the radar up when you hear something or you see something that... Could that be a song?
Absolutely. Always, I always say, you know, even if you don't have time to write, you have to have time to take notes like a songwriter, right?
Do you have a lot of notes?
I have a lot of notes on my phone mainly, you know, like that notes thing. I use that constantly for ideas and, you know, little fragments of songs. Sometimes it's just one line.
Yeah.
You know, and almost the whole first record I wrote just from random notes on my phone.
Yeah. They call that the gems. It's like if you write in a journal, there's, you know, you go back through and there's these little gems, either a line or a phrase or even just one word.
Yeah.
And Whittle is like, that's...
In fact, the first line of that song, I had written the kind of chorus and I had an idea and I was trying to come up with something for the verses. and I went through my random notes, and the first line of that song is "A penny for your thoughts, a quarter for your tears," and that's all I had. And I said, "Oh, that's a good line.
It's a start.
Yeah, it's something."
So, do you find yourself going back to those notes a
always
lot?
Yes. In fact, I, like I said, and I'll record these voice memos too, and then immediately forget them. Mm. And sometimes, if I have a long drive home from a gig, I will put my earbuds in and I will kind of cycle through some of the old voice memos just to see if there's anything good there.
Yeah.
And sometimes
you'll
find stuff like, I forgot all about that.
That was me.
That's, yeah.
I said that.
Yeah. So it's an interesting way to sort of the right stuff, but it does work because then, you have a way of not forgetting anything.
Now, do you ever go back, when you hear something and you all of a sudden it takes you back to a moment when you said that into your phone or you wrote that down.
Right.
And all of a sudden you get those feelings again. And so you're able to write.
And sometimes you're surprised, like I remember in that song in particular, I think I just had you bought the ticket to take the ride, and I had sang that into my phone like years ago, just that one line with that melody. And then oftentimes I sing it a cappella because I'm driving. I don't have a guitar in my lap. I'm
good,
driving a car,
good.
Which would be very dangerous. I don't recommend that.
Thank you.
But then I'll go home and I'll put that on, try to figure out what key I was singing in, and build the song around this a cappella voice memo. And that's kind of how Take the Ride came about.
Okay. Yeah. Well, really, officer, I was trying to write a song, really.
That's right. I wasn't playing guitar when I was driving.
Really, it's my craft. I need to do this. Yeah. Get out of the car, buddy.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, some good stuff. Again, you've got a CD release.
This
is your second album.
Second album, yeah.
The Steve Taylor 3.
Yes.
And it's the Tennessee Sessions because it was Tennessee.
Because, half in Nashville, half in Memphis.
Oh,
right.
There's
a nice collage. There
I
you
can't
see
the
Brian Frank and Carrie Weaver. And it's a sort of a travel log from our trips.
Fun. So obviously you'll have these at the
We will
the
have them
CD
for sale
release.
At March 3rd at Fifth Avenue. Yeah.
Yes. So when people need to find you.
They can go to thestevetaylor3.com and that'll take you, right to the ticket page for the CD release party.
Okay.
We got tickets on sale through Eventbrite and people can buy advance tickets. And after the album comes out, it'll be available on iTunes too and all wherever finer music is streamed.
And you'll have vinyl there?
We will have a limited edition vinyl run.
Limited.
Yeah. So if we're not going to have many because they're kind of expensive to produce.
Oh, yeah.
But,
Yeah.
If you're into vinyl, definitely
get
come
there.
And
if
get
you
there
want
early.
One, get there early. Yeah. So, and just when you just said that, SteveTaylor.com.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
Steve Taylor 3. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, so you added the 3.
We added the 3.
Okay.
Because unfortunately, my name is so common.
I was going to say, you got lucky with that if you did it. Okay.
Sometimes people have really long last names and they end up shortening it. And I have the opposite problem. I have a super
common
name.
Very common.
Where, everywhere I've lived, there's always 15 Steve Taylors in the phone book at the same time.
Right.
So. Yeah. So even when you try to look me up on iTunes, usually you have to search for a specific album and my name. Because if you just search for Steve Taylor, there's a lot of us out
there.
Or
Steve Taylor Detroit or Steve Taylor Michigan.
Something like that. Exactly. Yeah. You have to put something a little more specific in than Steve Taylor because there's quite a few of us.
Yeah.
We should start a club.
Start a club?
Yeah, that's right.
How many Steve Taylors can we fit in one place?
Absolutely, okay. Yeah.
Any last words you'd like to...
I just want to thank you for doing the show, Pam. It's been fun to just sit down and chat with you about the music business. And I've watched a lot of these online, and you've had a lot of great guests. And it's a cool thing that you do for local music here in Detroit.
Yeah.
And I just would encourage everybody to tune into this show and follow everything that Pam does. And
Thank you.
Come see us on March 3rd at Fifth Avenue.
We'd
appreciate it.
With a full band.
With the full band, yeah. We'll have the
three
full band.
Three times three.
Yeah, it'll be the Steve Taylor 10 that night.
The 10?
That's right.
Well, it'll be fun. It'll be fun. So congratulations on your second CD out there. It's been a while. When did the first one come out?
Check Your Baggage came out in 2014.
14, okay.
And this we've been kicking around for a while trying to finish some of the things off,
Yeah. You just got to get it out there,
I know,
I'm sure you're already thinking the songs for the next one. So
we are.
Yes,
we are.
That's pretty typical.
Yeah. My bass player and producer, Brian Frank, he actually has built a recording studio in his house.
Oh, nice.
So we did some additional tracking there. And,
okay.
Because of that, we will definitely probably have another record out this year.
Yeah. That helps. Yeah. You don't have to, worry about studio time somewhere or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah.
Although we have a studio here, by the way.
Yes.
I guess I'll plug it. Music Town, if you're an unsigned artist, you can use our studio here as well to get something down. So
excellent.
Lots of fun things here at Music Town. So again, thank you to our sponsors, Michigan State University Community School of Detroit, as well as Children's Hospital of Michigan Foundation. Without those two, this Music Town may not happen. So
right.
So thank you very much to those. Mm-hmm. And thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Pam.
It's
Thanks
been
for
a pleasure
me.
Sitting down and, you know, sounding great.
Thank you.
Some good songwriting there.
Thank you very much.
You know, with all the things that you do, like you said, right. You need more time in the day.
Yeah.
So just check it out, though. It's going to be fun on March 3rd down in Royal Oak, 5th Avenue.
5th Avenue in downtown Royal Oak,
I'm trying to place that where it's at, but
it's on 5th Avenue between Main Street and Washington.
Washington, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm thinking the other way, no wonder. Okay.
Right.
All right. So
but they
can
go to the stevetaylor3.com if they want to get
all
tickets.
All the information.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming in and playing for and entertaining us today
for
another edition of Behind the Mic. And we'll do it again another Monday coming up. So thanks for tuning in, as always. I appreciate that. I'm Pam Rossi. Have a great week.